Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Maron to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Maron at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to the Phileas Club, the show where we talk about the news with people from around the world. This is episode number 19 for November 28th, 2009. Hello and welcome to the Phileas Club. Hello, everyone. How are you doing? It's been almost 2 months since I've done a proper show, right? I did this stupid little mini show last time because I didn't have time to schedule for people to be here. So I'm really glad to have coming back to the Phileas Club, Turkey from Saudi Arabia. How are you doing, Turkey?
Hey, Patrick. How are you?
Wow, you sound more and more asleep every time we start the show.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be more because I'm in a boring place. You should try living here. You'll find out.
You really sell it really well. It's boring. Come on over. And we also have John, who's standing in from for another host that couldn't make it, unfortunately. And he sort of got asked to be on the show last minute. So thanks so much, John, for stepping up.
Hey, thank you for having me, Patrick.
I don't actually know where you're from. We've done a few shows together, and
I'm actually from Connecticut, United States.
All right, I didn't know that. That's fantastic. How are you doing? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, because the listeners might know about us, but not about you. It's the first time.
So, John, do you have to come from a place where it's difficult to pronounce?
Connecticut?
Just for you. You can. We sometimes like to call it Convicticut, but that's just because so many of our political officials have been convicted of something. No, I am. I work as a computer trainer and teaching people how to use computers in a retail store, which okay. I won't mention the name of. I also do podcasting on the side in my spare time, and have enjoyed reviewing movie trailers on Negative Cutters.
Right,
which Patrick has helped me out with
a couple of times. Yeah, actually, you know, we just mentioning it super quickly. We do this date night with Patrick and John on your show, and the first one we did was for the movie Treasure, and
Precious.
Precious, which you chose. And yep. I've seen the review on the Totally Rad show. They were saying that this is probably the most depressing, hellish, horrible movie ever. So if you want date advice, don't take it from us.
No, and I think that's the point.
All right, but we're not here to talk about dating or movies. We're here to talk about what's been happening around the world for the past month or so. And we have a couple of cool topics I want to mention. The first one is going to be the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, which was really big in Europe. And I'm very curious to find out if you guys even cared. By you guys, I mean in your countries. And then we might mention a little bit about the conference on climate change in Copenhagen. And then we'll go to our local stories. And just before that, I want to thank the chat room for being here. We're trying out the live stream chat room and live streaming service, which seems to be working pretty well. So thanks a lot for the people in the chat room. Thanks for being here. And I hope you will enjoy the show. Let's get started with the Berlin Wall and the anniversary of the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. 20 years already. Wow. That's feels like just yesterday people were celebrating in the street. And I think what I want to do is take a few minutes to talk about how we felt and how we what we remember from when the wall actually fell before talking about the 20th anniversary. And I think I'm very curious to know, as I was saying, how it was presented in your countries, because obviously for us, it's a huge, huge deal. As you can imagine, it was the beginning of the end for the Eastern Bloc, the Sovietic, you know, communist bloc. And I know that, you know, communism is a big deal in the US, but it was really on our doorstep. And I remember when I was... how old was I? I was a lot younger than I'm now, I guess 17, something like that. And I remember watching this on TV as it was happening and almost being incredulous. Like, I had known for my whole life about this, basically the division between Eastern and Western Europe, of course, and Germany was... What the world was made, it was part of my world. I had never known anything without, you know, a world without that. And when it started coming apart, it was so, it was like something that wasn't even imaginable was happening. And I know that you had signs and people knew that eventually communism was going to go down, but it went so fast. And I remember seeing, I guess my memory of it is seeing people from the Eastern Bloc, East Berlin, coming and taking the wall down, and I guess in a way finding out that there was something else. Remember, this is as a 17-year-old kid. They had been kept in the dark and they didn't know exactly what the West was like. And in my mind, it was like they were being freed and liberated. I know there is some truth to that, but that's really the way it fell from here. And it was a lot of welcoming them back into the world, I guess. It was like, okay, come on over. We're all going to be friends. It's all going to be fantastic. And now everything that we were worrying about almost on a daily basis is not going to be necessary anymore. It was really about... The joy of reuniting with the rest of Europe that had been separated from us in a violent and deceptive manner. So it was a great victory, which seems obvious, but I think it's... Well, anyway, that's the way I saw it.
Now, Patrick, at age 17, did you really have an understanding of what the wall actually meant before it came down?
Yeah, well, you know, 17, it's not like you're 9 or something. I mean, you study all of this in high school and you, right. As I was saying, you have on a daily basis, it's part of your world. You have these neighbors who are the Eastern Europeans who are, I don't want to present the world in a too Manichaean way, you know, divided black and white way, but it's still, they are the bad guys because you hear about the fact that they don't have food in their supermarkets and they have to line up to buy anything. And it's, well, you know what communism does, right? And so you do realize on a very, very almost intimate, it's part of your identity as a European, what's happening there. And yeah, I guess I could talk about this for a little bit more, but I want to hear what you guys felt back 20 years ago when it happened. Let's start with John.
Sure.
How old are you now? Because I'm not sure.
I just turned 30.
Okay, so you were...
So I was essentially 10. Mm-hmm. When the wall came out, came down, and I'm trying to remember. I want to think. like I have certain landmarks in my life that I kind of measure things by, yeah. as far as like, you know, what was happening in my life at the time. And I want to say this was either right before I went to military academy for a year or what? During that time.
At age 10?
New York Military Academy. They started, maybe I wasn't 10 yet.
So it's like a school or?
Yeah, it's like a, you know, it's a military academy that's basically goes from grade 6 and to 12.
Okay.
I personally had no concept of this at the time of what the wall meant. I think the coming down of the wall was what started my education on this, for the most part, that, you know, you started to hear more people talking about it constantly because, you know, I basically grew up, with little understanding of what the Cold War was, because it was pretty much, you know, beginning to come to an end at this point. Yeah,
For the few years before the fall of the wall, obviously. And just to say a little bit about this, a lot of people who are going to be listening to this show obviously have never known really what the Cold War was. I mean, there's a lot of people who are, you know, 20, 25. They didn't even... It's like this thing from the history books. So yeah. It's strange, but... Yeah, keep going.
Well, I mean, it's just for me, I think at that point we started to have classes discuss more about that. And I started to learn about, you know, communism. And probably a couple years after that, I started to, you know, we had to read the Scarlet Letter and McCarthyism started to, you know, being educated on that and things like that and how it affected our lives here. But I do remember watching the footage on television and watching sledgehammers being pounded into the wall and people piled up on top of this thing. And I don't think I understood what was happening, but you definitely felt a raw emotion coming through. And it was an event of epic proportions.
So there was, even at age 10, you remember seeing it as a celebration and people rejoicing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Turkey, what about you?
Let's see. How old was I? I think I was 13 when that happened. So it happened in a time in Saudi Arabia where basically there wasn't any satellite channels, and the only TV channel was the official government channel. And other than that, you have the newspapers, which were partly controlled by the government. So... As a general education in Saudi Arabia, unfortunately, the education in Saudi Arabia is very poor when it comes to politics and history. They really don't talk much about current politics or current history or even the 20th century history.
So they didn't really teach you about how did they approach the divide between the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc?
That's just communism, and that's just capitalism, and that's it. And we're Islamic, so.
Oh, okay.
We never really. I come from a background where officially in schools you don't learn anything about World War One, World War Two, or the whole Cold War. Nothing. It's like our history stops as soon as with the fall of the Ottoman Empire. That's where our history book stops in school. So
really, okay,
yeah, and it starts with with Islam. We don't even know about the Greeks or the Romans before Islam or anything like that. So
Wow, it's interesting how, you know, almost every time we mention something that doesn't have a direct relationship, it might be an impression, but. Every time we talk about something that doesn't have a direct relationship with Saudi Arabia or the Islamic world, consistently you've been half jokingly saying, we don't really care about them. They're outside and, you know, we don't worry about them.
Well, it has been with the exception of things have been changing more recently. But in the older days, specifically in the days of the Berlin Wall and so on, people don't actually never cared about what happened outside the borders of Saudi Arabia. It's, people they're only concerned with what's going on inside. And I think the first real reaction Saudis ever had outside Saudi borders was the Afghan war. So
with the Russians,
with the Russians, yeah. The Afghanistan war with the Russians, that's the first involvement internationally, a real national involvement with the entire population. Saying that, there were people did know about the divide in their own ways. It was basically public knowledge, even though it was never taught at school or anything like that. And I do remember, if memory serves me right, there was some very heavy coverage on the Saudi TV news hour. So during the news hours, they have showed, I do remember seeing pictures on TV of people climbing the wall and trying to demolish it. And comes down to who you speak if at the time, and you would find this interesting. The people who talked most about such things and really made a big deal out of it were the older people. And when I'm saying older, like people in their, at the time they were in their 50s or 60s, 70s, 80s. Those are the generation who grew up listening and following the news. They went through wars and like the Israeli-Palestinian wars and so on. And for them, it and independence. Many countries got independent, and like the United Arab Emirates and Qatar and Bahrain, they only became independent in the 70s, early 70s. So it was new, and people kept on tracking all the news, and the only reliable source people went to was the BBC radio network. There's an Arabic broadcast of the BBC, and that was, like, I remember my father every single night taking his radio, sitting outside, turning it on to the BBC, and just sitting there and listening and having tea. And that was normal for all the old people at the time.
I see.
So the young people didn't really follow much at the time.
So there wasn't like a general effervescence, like, you know, sense of the world is changing and something is happening and we're all part of it, I guess, back then.
No, not really. In a way, the Saudi, when it comes to official media did cover it on the fact that communism is anti-Islamic. So they did cover it on the aspect that the fall of communism, which is an anti-Islamic perspective, has been falling. And that's the way they covered it. And that's the only way people were interested in.
Okay. Since
communism religion wasn't accepted mostly.
Of course.
I'm just interested to know, as from an Islamic point of view, what other than communism not being Islam, what is the viewpoint of communism for Saudi Arabia?
I guess communism being, you know, taking a ban on all religions.
Communism bans religion, and liberal, and it's very ultra liberal when it comes to social aspects,
right?
About sexes and so on. So it's completely against Islam in its own way. So,
all right. So fast forward 20 years to a couple of weeks ago, the celebrations of the fall of the wall, obviously, and how far we've come, mostly for myself in France, for people who might not know, France is right next door to Germany. So basically, I was going to make a Sarah Palin joke with Russia here, but maybe I shouldn't.
A Sarah Palin throw from Russia or
something like that. Yeah. I mean, it's really like, in effect, we are the next door neighbors to Germany, so what happens there affects us very, very much. And the celebration has to, you can't really talk about that 20-year celebration without talking about how incredibly close the German and French people and government have become. It was already the case with the Western, with West Germany, but even more so now, Europe has come very, very far in uniting itself, in, you know, intertwining the economics, economic needs and supplying and markets. So they really have become, it might not be super apparent, but today, something like these wars that had been plaguing Europe between France and Germany mostly are completely unimaginable. And I was talking about this with a friend from the UK a couple of days ago. And in my workplace, we have people from all over Europe. And consistently, we make jokes with the German. We joke about the war. Like, I don't know, we'll mention, you know, something about Germany and Poland and the fact that, you know, there's a Polish guy in the office and we're going to say, hey, German guys, don't, you know, walk over the Polish guy today. You know, it's a holiday. Don't do it today or something like that. I don't know. But we keep joking about the war. And we noticed how these young Germans have no problem. You know, they're maybe 20, 25, maybe 30, and they don't have a problem with it because it seems so remote that it's okay to joke about it because it's we are so close and almost part of the same nation. Well, nation is a strong word, but the same community with the same people. And joking about Nazis invading Poland is almost okay.
Interesting.
And, oh, wait, the chat room has gone dark. I'll try to launch it again. Oh, there it is. Yeah, so it's completely okay to joke about things like that, whereas obviously maybe someone who was of the previous generation wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't be comfortable with, from the previous generation, I mean in a German person from the previous generation, wouldn't be comfortable saying, oh, you know, the Nazis are going to have did this and ha ha ha, it's funny. You're like,
well, I think you've got two things that have sort of separated that. You're like, yes, you have a generation that personally has no connection to any sort of atrocities or anything as far as being connected to Germany, Nazi Germany or anything like that. And at the same time, you've got them being so far away from their belief system. And as someone even in the chat room has mentioned this, Sean SQ said they generally don't believe in the beliefs of Nazi Germany. So they're more, more on your side than theirs. And I think the absurdity, there's almost an absurdity for them, of why that this would even ever happen. So once yeah. something moves into the realm of the absurd, joking about it becomes much easier and much easier to deal with it by joking about it.
Yeah, I guess so. It has it does have something to do with that. I was curious though, do they ever get tired of it? Like, because it's like, I don't want to say every conversation, but every time there's a joke to be made, that's what the joke is about. And I don't know, I guess it's on the same level as, you know, you guys in the US when we do, you know, podcasts with me and we start joking about you are hamburger eaters and someone will come back with, yeah, well, you know, don't put out your white flag yet or something like that because I'm French. And
right.
I don't really take it bad at all because we're just among friends and we're joking around with no consequence or no deep meaning to that beyond the joke. And so anyway, all this is to say that we have grown very, very close. And the celebration was, I think, at least for me, I think it was the case for everyone, but for me, there was a sense of pride, which is difficult to explain, but I took it, I guess, and I think that all the celebration and the ceremonies that were in Berlin were a way of saying, look how far we have come together. Look what we accomplished. And there was, of course, a lot of reports on TV about the guy who was a high-ranking official in the German East German government, who announced that the door, the Brandenburg Gate, I guess, was going to open, which was the main passage point between the East and the West in Berlin. And the people from Eastern Germany went to the streets, and it was broadcast on TV, so they thought, okay, now it's okay, we can go down now and go and cross the gate. But the people, the military personnel that was guarding the gate, had not received any order to let people go, to let people pass. So everyone was asking, the reporters were asking, what? How did you react? What did you do? Did you, you know, you were supposed to shoot people who were trying to go through? And they said there was so many people. First of all, we didn't want to shoot them, of course. And second of all, there was so many people, there was no way we could have done anything. It was a sea of every person from Berlin who was coming down. I've met a few German people since then, and I asked them about the moment when the wall fell and when they finally had the right to go into the West. And overwhelmingly, what they remember was, well, maybe not overwhelmingly, but the people I talked to were sometimes a little bit younger. So what they really remember was the fact that as families, they would gather, travel sometimes from the countryside, and go to the West, and they had received a little, a small allowance from the state to, you know, celebrate the fall of the wall and everything. And they traveled to the West and bought toys and Disney character paraphernalia. And that is the thing that a lot of them told me, and that they remembered, because obviously, I guess, you know, Disney is a symbol of the West and capitalism and all that wonderful. These wonderful things that they had access to at this point. So yes, I guess a huge celebration on TV everywhere for several days leading up to the ceremonies. And again, that overwhelming sense of pride of this is how, this is what we did together. It wasn't just about Germans being there, but really about us, mostly, especially between France and Germany, and Sarkozy was at the ceremonies over there, and Angela Merkel was in France a few days earlier for celebrating the armistice of the war. So, yes, that's it, I guess. Celebrating together, happy, proud, we're all cool. And at this point, I really don't see how we could go back to a conflict like that, which obviously can always happen. I realize, you know, peace is precious and we should guard it, you know, with a lot of efforts. But it feels like it's almost impossible to go back to a situation like there was 50 years ago or 60 years ago.
I mean, you don't think there are certainly areas in the world where that does continue to happen?
Oh, no, of course. But I mean, because historically, Germany and France were at it for forever. And even, you know, UK and France and Europe was a cesspool of war and conflict. And today, with the economic intertwined, you know, relationships that I was talking about, and the sense of being, that is basically what the people, the leaders after the war wanted to achieve. They were like, okay, we've had three major wars in the past, you know, 70 years. This cannot go on anymore. We almost destroyed ourselves this time. And they said, with De Gaulle at the head of it, they said, how can we make sure this doesn't happen again? And they sort of decided that we had to be united, not, you know, get a European identity and economical work together. And I think they have managed with all the, you know, problems that the EU has and all the issues, and there are a lot, but they have managed to do it as much as they could. And the sense of pride that we felt with this Berlin Wall celebration is a testament to that, I think. All right, so celebrations. Let's talk with Turkey. Now that you have satellite and all of that, Was it different from 20 years ago?
No, not really. And I think it's mostly, I think, because of other more important news for currently in Saudi Arabia being covered. So it's kind of, it was mentioned on the news. It's they did cover it, but we have a lot of things going on. We have a war right now in the south. We got pilgrimage for Hajj, and we got some floodings. And there's a few things going on here, so it's not really on top of the priority list.
Hmm. Okay. So, but it was like mentioned in passing, and no one really cares.
Yeah, it was mentioned. And celebrations. You're talking about a culture that is not used to celebrating things that already happened. So it's happened, that's it. What are we
really
celebrating about? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, in Islam, you have celebrations of lots of stuff that have already happened.
No, we don't officially, no, and especially in the Sunni Islam. Okay. There's only two holidays, and those are the holidays they only celebrate, and they have nothing with the past. They're mostly things that happen at the same time.
Okay. Okay. And John, what about you?
I mean, I'll have to say, I mean, it was on the news. There wasn't. It was more of like a news point. There, I don't think I saw too many celebrations happening here. But I think the most interesting thing that happened out of the 20th anniversary celebrations was the Journey of the Wall project. And I can't pronounce the name of of the actual name of the project, but they took...
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Well, they took 20 bricks from the Berlin Wall, they said symbolic wall bricks, and they sent it to different countries like Korea, Cyprus, Yemen, and other places, and basically where you've got some separation, border issues and division is pretty much kind of central in their lives. And they basically used it like they do with a lot of things as a canvas. I'm getting the
echo.
As a canvas for artists and things like that, to paint the bricks and stuff. And I think that is a very interesting way of celebrating the fall of the Berlin Wall to see, okay, what kind of lesson can this wall be for the rest of the world?
Hmm. Okay. And you did hear about this.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I'm not sure. I mean, there was a lot of painted wall, like dominoes, in the celebration, in the ceremony, and they made one fall and it was making all the other ones fall and all that crap. But I haven't heard about this project in particular.
I forget what channel I saw it on. It was only one story, but it was the one that actually stuck with me out of all the, you know, just the video of people celebrating. And I think it was the most kind of just the most meaningful way to celebrate it.
Okay. Well, so I guess it is a big deal, and mostly for us, and not so much for you other people. I guess I'm a little bit disappointed. I wanted the whole world to revel in our joy. That's just how nice I am.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where every country has those moments, and as we move closer to becoming more of a world economy and breaking down a lot of those borders, I think we'll have more moments where you will see more countries celebrating with each other of these moments. But you know, everyone has sort of their...
I think that's wishful thinking.
Yeah, well, certainly. But I mean, can't you say that at this point, you know, Europe has gone towards that point? Europe is becoming, you know, more borderless and more unified, because, I mean, at the very least, you have a unified currency and things are starting to move towards each other.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just not sure how unified we will become with the rest of the world. Although, hey, great way to transition into the next topic. With the conference on climate change in Copenhagen, things seem like they have been going pretty well. And we thought that we were not going to get any significant advance. But in the past few years, in the past few days, we've been basically following what Obama was going to do. If he wasn't going to go there, if he was going to say give his okay to a reduction in carbon emissions, and all of it depended on. Were they going to give? I'm sorry. Would other big countries agree to also reduce their carbon emissions? And very recently, we heard that Obama was indeed going to be in Copenhagen. And today, I think Sarkozy was at another meeting of world powers, and India announced that they would be okay with it too. So it seems like things are falling into place, and we are very, I guess we're trying to lead the way by maybe not by reducing our carbon emissions ourselves, but at least motivating everyone to say yes at the same time so that we don't have that stupid little chicken game of watching who's going to go first.
Right.
And so I guess for us, we're all for it, but we're not in the position that you guys are in, which is huge, heavy, super big dependence of oil on oil for you guys in the US, because at least in France, we have a lot of nuclear powered plants.
Yeah, till one of them.
Oh, nuclear scares us.
Then we can talk, Patrick.
What? I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you
I'll
said.
I'll wait until one of them blows up, then we can talk.
Well, you know, at least until then, we're getting warm apartments, which is, you know, important.
So, what are you trying to say, Patrick?
That we don't need as much oil. That's all. That's it.
Okay.
And how are you going to take care of all of that waste?
That we'll just bury it in the sea. We'll see.
Ah, thank you very much.
In the Mediterranean Sea, right there.
No.
The Dead Sea is fine. Wait, no, all the salt to make it all float.
Just
dump it. Let someone else worry about
it.
The next generation worry about it.
Oh, and like using up all the petrol is all the gas.
Hey, petrol, you can work around it. You put more plants. There's different ways. That thing stays for 1,000 years or more, and doesn't go away.
All right. So I guess you two aren't super pro nuclear.
I'm actually perfectly fine with nuclear power.
Really?
I'm fine with nuclear as long as they allow us to have bombs.
What?
What?
Well, I don't think there's a question that we're not going to have bombs, so you're fine on that end. You can have as many bombs as you want. Well, not you, but, you know. That conference, have you even heard about it? Because it's been like a huge deal for us in the past few days. Well, not a huge deal, but we've heard it's the one thing that comes back again and again and again.
To be honest with you, I haven't even like been able to see anything past parades and gigantic turkey balloons for the past few days. So I really haven't heard anything about recent happenings in the conference. Wow.
So I guess we'll talk about this a little bit more in a few minutes with the local stories.
Sure.
And I guess my second question is for Turkey. Do you get like anti Copenhagen climate warming, climate change conference propaganda on Saudi media?
No, we just go mad when we heard the word fuel tax.
Uh-huh.
When you Europeans start saying that word, we start hating you.
But do you love us before that, or is it just like...
I was like, start hating you.
Yeah.
No, we love you until you say, we're going to start to have fossil fuel tax, and then we start hating you.
Yeah, I guess that... It is one of the ways that we're trying to reduce the carbon emissions, but I mean
that's a tough thing because it's like, all right, how do you force how do you get people to change? And if saving the earth and saving our future and something that's not overly tangible isn't enough to make that change, then it's that's where taxes start coming in.
Yeah,
I mean that's the same way you want people to stop smoking. Well, tax the hell out of it. Make it legal and tax it.
We recently had an increase in the cigarette tax, which some people were not happy about. But yeah, I guess it's the only way. And obviously, the countries who do produce gas and petrol are not going to be happy about it. All right. So what you're saying, Turkey, is that you don't really care about that conference and you're not going to be following it.
But no, I mean, as I said, we do have here other problems that people are more interested in at the moment.
Okay, so let's move to these other problems and talk about the local.
I need to rant on one topic because we didn't do last show.
Okay,
here we go.
Peace Prize.
The Nobel Peace Prize?
Yes. I have to rant on this one.
Didn't we? I think so, yeah.
I don't remember. It's still bothering me.
I can take it. You can talk. I don't care.
It's still bothering me till today.
No, I remember, Turkey, we talked about it. Maybe you weren't on the show, but I remember that I ranted about it and said that it was ridiculous and you know, all these things.
All right, great. I did talk about it. Then I don't need to rant since you already said it was ridiculous. Okay, you got my approval on it.
I got your back on that one. All right, so now local stories. For me, you know what? There wasn't a lot. I mean, swine flu stuff happening, not big panics. There was the midterm for Sarkozy. We don't have elections in the midterms, unlike the U.S., but he basically brought back a lot of talks about the... one of his favorite topics, which is immigration and insecurity and crime, which I could... there's a weird dichotomy here in France about crime specifically, because it is used obviously about as a politics tool, like you wave the fear. It's sort of a little bit, not fear-mongering, but it's conveniently... brought back when the you know, elections come around. But on the other hand, we do have a serious crime problem. Not very serious, but in some of the less rich neighborhoods that are almost like ghettos, we don't have guns or anything like that, but the cops in some of them can't really go in some parts of them anymore. And you would have things like kids or gangs of kids who light up a car, who burn a few cars, and if the police or the firemen come to extinguish it, people throw stones at them. Like it's almost a game, you know? They light up a car if people
whack a cop.
Come here. Yeah, something like that. And it's not like you get people dying all the time, but it is a problem, and you have other, you know... So we have problems like these with...
It happens when you get North Africans in slums.
Yeah, exactly. That's the exact problem. And we built... It's not slums. I mean, it's living quarters. How do you call it?
And how about the slum you just cleared?
No, that's different. That's a different issue. You're talking about...
the jungle, camps. I think you call it, or something.
Yeah, it's a different issue. It's camps where we put illegal immigrants pending deportation, I guess, which they become super problematic because they don't have enough place to put them, and then a certain class of the French political scene doesn't want them to be extradited. But then when you ask what we should do with them, some people want to do mass regularization, but they are very few.
So is that exactly what the District 9 was about?
I wasn't going to bring that up.
I guess you could see it like that. But so
yeah, the main character in District 9 did have a resemblance to Patrick. No, I'm just kidding.
What?
Oh, yeah, you got that right. I agree with that.
But so what I wanted to say is that we have a sort of strange relationship with security issues and police work, because the police is not respected at all in some of these regions. But when you talk about being tougher on crime, a lot of people go back to, you know what, we are we are responsible for this because we brought workers from Northern Africa to build the country back up, basically, after the war. And now they are in terrible conditions. So we should, basically, being tough on them is not the solution. But obviously, we should be doing more in the area of education. But it doesn't mean that, in my opinion, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't have the law be respected. So that was a... It's not an easy thing to talk about, but every time you get someone talking about having the law respected and enforced, we very much go to some of the political class and some of the media very much go to, oh, look at that, this is extreme right-wing stuff, and we shouldn't accept these things because it's dangerous, and this, you know, Sarkozy is a Nazi, basically. And again, he brought back the issue of security, as I said, conveniently, you know, at some point. And this whole debate sparked up again because it's an easy win, because it is a problem. So I'm not giving a solution or an appreciation there, but that is...
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's one of those unsolvable problems, though. I mean, because there's so many facets to an issue like that. I mean, it's the same in America as far as immigration. And, you know, you always hear people talking about, like, California and you know, do we give, rights, you know, to immigrants who are coming up, and as more immigrants who have been here, you know, for some time, are then giving more rights to those people, and it's just like this gigantic argument, and it doesn't matter which side you fall on, it's horrible answers no matter what, because everyone wants to solve one issue, and you can't. You know, one issue does not fix the others, and you have to sort of, you know, it's the same reason why, you know, why communism didn't work and all these things, because the idealistic path does not realistically work. And it just gets distorted and messed up over time till it becomes warped. And it's one of those, for us in America, it's a political it's one of those political things that you argue for the sake of distracting from things that we can actually reasonably fix.
Well, I think to an extent, it's not 100% similar, but to an extent, you did nail it on the head, which is a lot of people would like things to be wonderful and us to be able to solve the crime and security issues without enforcing the law by police work. And it would be wonderful, but I don't think it can really work. And we do have to work on both fronts. But a lot of people don't want to see that and don't want to accept it. So we get on one side the people who say no police, this is fascist, and on the other side you say that you have the people who say, you know, you think that we can solve everything with education, but we don't have time or whatever. We need to do that first. But we really should be working on both. We have issues like kids not coming to school and anyway, there's a whole education chapter which I could rant about for a long time also. But I think we wouldn't have time for this. Maybe we should do a special on education and children. That is an interesting topic. Who is responsible for what? But yes, let's move on to what I guess is going to be sad and depressing, which is the updates from Turkey, before we talk about something super fun, which is the updates from John. We'll see if
my predictions are. Are you calling me sad and depressing?
No, you've been talking about floods and wars and...
Plus, how come you didn't mention anything about your president visiting Saudi Arabia?
Because it was touted as a private visit, but it did make a stink because he was supposed to be on a mayor gathering meeting thing, and he promised he was going to be there every year, and he wasn't there because he was in Saudi Arabia, but apparently he was in Saudi Arabia because of a private thing, but it wasn't really private, so that did cause a big stink, yes.
Patrick, what would he do in private in Saudi Arabia?
I don't know. Go for ice cream. What do I know?
Do they have gelato?
I'm sure they do. They have everything. They even have air conditioning. I don't
know. We have snow skating rinks.
Yes, I wasn't sure if it was in it's in Dubai. They have a snow slope.
Yeah, right? Yeah. We also have a couple here.
You do? Wow. All right. So what's been happening?
Saudi Arabia. Well, I have four news topics that were huge. And okay. Three of them are still huge now.
Okay.
So the first one is not Saudi Arabia related. However, and I'm sure you know about this, Patrick, football game or soccer between Algeria and Egypt.
Yes, I've heard about it. But how does it affect Saudi Arabia?
It's just unbelievable. It's a huge news coverage here.
Oh, okay. Well, it was pretty big here too.
People were killing each other, hitting each other, all over a football game.
Killing each other? There wasn't any killing here.
Yeah, there were deaths.
Really? Well, it was... So people understand. Tell me if I'm not mistaken, because I don't really follow football at all, but Algeria won the match, which qualified them for something which hadn't happened for 30 years.
Yeah, it's a match to qualifying for the World Cup.
Okay. And so South Algeria Africa. Won, and
there were three matches. The first match was in Algeria, and Algeria won. The second match was in Egypt, and Egypt won. The third match was in Sudan, and Algeria won. So Algeria officially qualified. Woo-hoo. But through all of this, there were riots everywhere, destruction. The newspapers, the television channels were attacking each other. If you didn't know that there was a game, if you just came in there and just started hearing and seeing what's going on, you would just think there's a war going on, and the reason is someone killed a president, was assassinated or something. You will never ever think for a second it's all over a football game.
Yeah, we do have. You know, it's funny. I do think about this sometimes. The football fans can become super violent. And it seems to be only about football, because maybe I'm mistaken, John, you can tell me this, but I don't think that you have people becoming super violent like this in the streets and rioting about American football or baseball or whatever.
Not really. No, I mean, not to the extent hockey. That you see about...
In hockey, they do it on the rink. Like they.
Right. They do it in the streets. I've seen videos of that.
I would say hockey is probably the closest thing to it, but nothing tops soccer.
All right, so that was the first thing.
That was the first one. Second news, there is a war going on down south in Saudi Arabia right now. Officially, it's not a war, but apparently the Shia rebels in Iran attacked a Saudi post on the borders down south and killed one of the soldiers there and wounded a few, and Saudi Arabia decided no more, and it responded very strictly. And now I think it's been 3 weeks, I think, and we're still bombing them.
Wow. You know, that is one of the things that it's been mentioned here, but I don't think it's been made into the big thing that it should be, because Saudi Arabia and Iran going at it is a pretty big deal.
And, but officially Iran until now hasn't gone at it, and Saudi Arabia is trying to avoid getting Iran directly involved.
So it's considering that it's just, you know, these tribes and they're...
Yeah, officially Iran is not involved, and officially it is supporting them, but still, it's not the support that could start a war yet.
Okay. John, did you hear about this at all? Because it seems like, you know, 3 weeks, it's not just the Thanksgiving period, but it would seem like Iran and Saudi Arabia would be a big news item in the U.S.
Nothing really coming to me, but...
Okay, yeah, so same here.
No, I don't think they covered it. I was surprised CNN almost never covered the whole thing. Yeah. So,
okay, so that's surprised. Two.
That's two. Number two, three is we have now the pilgrimage here in Mecca, which is the yearly pilgrimage. Now we have about over 2 million people performing the pilgrimage in the holy city of Mecca. It's a huge occasion. It happens every year. Since it's on the Islamic lunar calendar, it changes every Gregorian year. So it's different times of the year, but it's on the lunar calendar, it's the same exact time.
Hmm. And I remember you mentioned that it would be a big swine flu problem, and I knew that it was mentioned.
It is considered a huge swine flu the problem. However, until now, things look very good. There have only been, I think, 4 deaths of swine flu and about only 40 infections caught. So
it's not bad for the amount of people down there.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. People are surprised. It's going smooth. Saudi Arabia does take this event very, very seriously. It spends billions and billions of dollars on this event every year just to organize it. And they even called many officials from Europe and the U.S. to come and support about the swine flu. They make help them monitor it. So thankfully, it's moving. This year has been moving very smoothly.
It's funny how the swine flu craze and panic hasn't really turned into anything. From what we heard a few months ago that we mentioned on the show, we were fairly certain that it was going to be an epidemic of epic proportions. And I don't think anyone's been having big swine flu problems in the world to this day. Could it be that we were prepared and acted appropriately? That's
I think people are just starting, as time progresses, they're just adapting. Their bodies are starting to adapt to it. After all, if you get the swine flu once, you never get it again.
Brent, yeah, I guess so.
I think I've had it.
Yeah. You think?
Well, as I never got. I was back in September. There was something that went through my whole store, and I was sick for about 5 weeks. Like the longest illness I've ever had. It's actually why I ended up, I stopped podcasting for a while because I couldn't talk without coughing.
You didn't go to the doctor to ask if it was swine flu?
Nah, I didn't care.
You're not easily impressed.
What was that?
Did you have a temperature?
At times, and it turned into like a sort of a hanging on of just sort of like it just kind of ended up settling in my chest. If it wasn't swine flu, it was some nasty little bug. But many people I knew were sick for an extended period of time, no matter what they did.
Yeah, same here. I actually had a flu that, or a super strong.
No, I know a few people, families, entire families that had the swine flu.
Yeah,
and they just came out okay. Not a big deal. Wasn't that big of a deal.
So, all right, so that's number three. Do you have a number four?
Or final one is thanks to stupid, very poor and stupid planning and corruption. It rained like crazy on Jeddah City on the Red Sea, and it resulted
poor planning on the raining schedule.
poor planning of building the roads and the neighborhoods and so on, and ended up with a lot of floods, and up to no less than 106 people are already dead right now.
Crap, you make me feel bad for my joke now.
Yeah, and it's so bad, and people are taking it so seriously and so pissed off about it, because there should have been billions of riyals spent to fix this, because this is a problem that happens every year. It's not something that people were surprised by to see it happening. And it's supposed to have been solved. So now there are a few lawyers in Saudi Arabia who are putting a case together and are going to sue the government, the municipality of Jeddah.
Okay, so is that like realistically going to happen? The trial?
As long as it got on the news, it's going to happen right now.
Okay.
Now, how practical it would be, we don't know. But it will happen, and as far as I know, this is not official. This is only word of mouth. The prince of the region, or the governor of the region, was so pissed off, he actually ordered the arrest of 8 high-ranking officials in the municipality of the region.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. That's not official yet. That's what I heard, and people are still following, but this is a disaster. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, we heard about the flooding here, but not the follow-up.
It's big. Other than that, we just celebrated yesterday Eid al-Adha.
Which
is part
is?
Of the pilgrimage. Eid al-Adha is a holiday. It's an Islamic holiday. There's two Islamic holidays in the year. Eid al-Adha is a celebration of the end of the pilgrimage. And part of the tradition, every single family, Muslim family around the world, if capable, are required to sacrifice an animal, which is mostly a lamb or a sheep. And then, yeah, take those that meat and divide it into 3/3. 1/3 goes to the household. 1/3 goes to family, neighbors, and friends. And 1/3 goes to the poor.
Interesting.
That's it's an interesting tradition which does cause now and then issues in France, because you have families living in buildings who want to sacrifice lambs, and it's basically sanitary problems.
That's wrong. They should just go and do it in some special place, or just hire someone to do it for them, and they just pick it up. They don't have to do it themselves.
Yeah.
So
I guess
it's easy to avoid. It's just people like to make a fuss out of it and think, no, it's this way or that way. Mm. But it's a big thing. Like, I think, I don't know how many sheep they sacrificed this year, but it would be at least in one day, like at least 2 million sheep were sacrificed.
Sheep.
What's the symbolism of the sacrificing of the?
It's based on the story of Abraham.
Okay.
And according to, I think, in Christianity and Judaism, Abraham was ordered to sacrifice Isaac,
right,
son. And in Islam, no, we have the same exact story in Islam. However, in this story is Ishmael. His son Ishmael was the one.
I think he was supposed to sacrifice Ishmael, and then Sarah gave him Isaac when she was 70 or something. No.
They were completely different parts of the world.
Sure.
Ishmael was in Mecca in Saudi Arabia, and Isaac was in Palestine. And apparently the story is
study both. My Old Testament again.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but that's what I know. But for those who don't know what the story is, in case, it's basically God ordered him to sacrifice his son. He went and he ordered his son, and he was about to sacrifice him, and God rewarded him for praying for him without question by giving him an animal to sacrifice in place of his son.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's basically the story. And we got someone sending us some messages.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure we're going to be able to get him in now. We're nearing the end of the show.
Can we just bring him in
and talk about Turkey Day with me?
All right. Let's bring him in. I was going to phase him out for. We'll see if he picks up. So yes, that's it for Saudi Arabia. Thanks so much. And we are going to be talking about Turkey Day. Woohoo.
Thanksgiving.
you see, you have to look at Turkey Day this way. Americans sacrifice turkeys on Thursday. We sacrifice sheep on Friday.
That's funny.
There's some sacrifices that happen on Friday, but I'll get to that.
Yeah. I think it was, who was it who was saying, Lou in the chat room was saying that he wasn't really super for the sacrifice idea. But it was good that he, you know, 1/3 was going to the poor, etc. And he also mentioned that in Christianity and Judaism, he was indeed, not him, but Abraham was indeed going to sacrifice Isaac. But it's true, you know, if you're not about, you're not super happy about sacrifice, then do you sacrifice the turkey? Poor turkey. Let us know in the chat room. So, yes, Turkey Day. Does it actually, John, take over like the whole world? Do you just talk about this and not talk about anything else?
Well, I mean, everything, as far as like on Thanksgiving, everything on TV is basically parades, American football, and food. And that's it. Like, I think
you
it's like
Patrick,
the world
stops. How famous I am? You can have an entire day
dedicated to you.
Well, I think we're supposed to stuff turkey with, you know, stuffing and eat it with a side of gravy. So I'm not sure you'd want that turkey.
No, thanks. I usually hide when I was in the U.S. I go and lock myself at my apartment. And yes, I'm really worried about people thinking I'm one of those turkeys.
It's such a cheap joke. I can't believe we even made it. But
hey, go with it.
Randy is with us. He was supposed to be here, but didn't, I don't know, scheduling issues. He is asleep or something, but he's here in the end.
That's right. I am asleep and talking to you right now.
It's amazing. That must be, very talented.
I think it must be the 17th time that I've scheduled you for a show, and you, for one reason or another, you didn't show up.
But who's counting?
I think the 99th time, and the next time we win a camera, I think
I think next time we're going to do something and forget that your baby is going to be on the way, and you're not going to be here with a good excuse. So
got about 5.5 weeks according to schedule.
Cool.
Wow.
I think you know John Randy Copperdome.
Yes.
Who very kindly came to be the third chair on the show. So guys.
So did I?
Just after Patrick went crazy and cursed you and did some.
There was wailing and gnashing teeth.
I'm not. I can't repeat this.
I assume I've already missed the opportunity to wish you a happy belated Turkey Day to Turkey.
Yes, we were joking about this.
Yeah.
So, but you haven't missed the opportunity. No, we were going to talk about Turkey Day now. And John was telling us that basically when Turkey Day happens, so Thanksgiving for the people who don't know, the day where the whole of America celebrates the extermination of Native American, I think. That's what you do.
Enactments and all sorts of things.
But I don't think we realize exactly how big Thanksgiving is, because we really don't celebrate it, obviously, at all in Europe and not in the Middle East either. I had a few people on Twitter tell me, "So what are you doing for Thanksgiving Day?" And I was like, "Well, nothing. It's Thanksgiving Day. We didn't kill any Native Americans, so we don't celebrate anything."
Okay, so, well, I mean, you know, I never realized how big Thanksgiving was until I got out of the United States for a couple of Thanksgivings, and the first thing that occurs to me is that it's not just something that was invented in what became the United States. 300 years ago, it actually has roots in harvest festivals that were celebrated by all kinds of cultures in Europe and going backwards for hundreds of years before that. But you got to realize harvest festivals are celebrated by poor rural types. And before a couple hundred years ago, everyone lived under kings and no dictator or theocrat is going to canonize someone for celebrating a harvest festival. So you can see why they didn't spring up and propagate all around the world, but rather only in a couple of places like the United States and Canada.
Can I ruin this festival even more after we just declared that it was celebrating killing all the Indians?
Go for
also,
it.
Also, the reason they killed turkeys, because they called them turkeys after the Ottomans, the Turks, because they hated all the Muslims.
What?
Oh my gosh, that's just...
I thought it was just because they were easy shots because they can't fly.
It's probably closer to that.
Yes. It's unbelievable. It is really amazing if you think about poor religious refugees in the 16th and 17th century fleeing across the Atlantic Ocean, getting to the United States or what would become United States and Canada, and grasping around for how to feed themselves and finding this incredible source of protein in terms of these nice plump birds. You know, like it all makes sense. I would like to know why there's a country named Turkey and a bird named Turkey, but that's another show.
So Turkey Day. Turkey Day also goes with... I'm sorry, maybe you wanted to talk more just about Turkey Day. I was going to move on to Black Friday, but...
I was just pointing out that I never realized how big it was in the United States until I was in Canada for it.
So they celebrate it in Canada too?
Right, there's a Thanksgiving celebration in Canada, as I think was attempted to push throughout the Commonwealth, 100, 150 years ago. But it's not as big. It happened 6 weeks ago, but the people do all the same things. They get together with their families, they roast a turkey, and they make stuffing and eat all the usual, the same foods. But it's not as big, and like I said, I went around asking Canadians this week. So, what do Americans do on their Thanksgiving?
I'm sorry, Randy. I have to interrupt because Lou, who is like a live Wikipedia in the chat room, is explaining to us that the bird and the country are indeed related. I'm not going to go into the whole explanation. You can go to Wikipedia probably for that. But
in short, Patrick, I was joking. I have no idea. I just made that up.
Yeah, I know you were joking.
I'm just making sure. And Lou is trying to explain the facts. So.
Yes, exactly. I know you were joking. But yeah, it is indeed related. It's incorrect. The bird was incorrectly identified as a type of Guinea fowl, I guess. Also known as what? Guinea fowl? Okay. Also known as turkey fowl with fowl and or turkey hen or turkey something. That bird that was incorrectly identified it as was named like that because it was imported through Central Europe through Turkey. To Central Europe through Turkey. So the two are indeed related. So if you want to turn your joke about into rant about racism and xenophobia, I think you could have a leg to stand on. Yeah. All right. Sorry. So, guys, yes, I'm going to stop interrupting you and Turkey Day. And actually, John, maybe you have more to say.
So Thanksgiving for me is at this point, since my side of the family is spread out all over the country, I don't get to spend Thanksgiving with them. So my wife and I drive up about 3.5 hours up to upstate New York to see her family for Thanksgiving. And unfortunately, that's all ruined by the fact that I work in retail, and Black Friday basically means that I have to work the day before and the day after. So I pretty much drive a total of 7 hours to sit down at a table with in a very crowded room with a bunch of people, stuff myself, pass out, and then hope that I can stay conscious enough for the drive home.
And, but, hey, can you explain what Black Friday is? Because I'm not sure everyone would know.
So Black Friday is the historically the right after Christmas is when everyone starts to go out to or right after Thanksgiving when everyone starts to Christmas shopping for the holidays, and that is typically the rush of extra income is typically the point where businesses move from being in the red to being in the black, which means the point that they become profitable, hence the name Black Friday. I think it's taken on more of a plague type connotation these days, with the mass amounts of like the swarms of locusts of people descending upon stores at like 2, 3 in the morning, trying to get some ridiculous deal on whatever it toy is for the season or things like that. So it's crazy. But this year, I mean, I have to say, we prep for in our store we were like, everybody show up like 2 hours before your shift, park at the farthest point away from the mall, you know, make sure that you can get out easily. Because, you know, we just sort of remember our holiday seasons last year. I mean, there was a point last year where it took me 3.5 hours to get out of the parking lot to get home.
Jesus. So, yeah, I guess, you know, we talked about Black Friday last year, I think. But it's interesting to have the account of the thing from the...
Mall employee?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I remember we talked about the Walmart thing.
Where people got killed and...
Where the employee got trampled. Killed from
yeah,
a stampede.
I remember that. Yeah, but so isn't it supposed to be like the recession over there, and you're not going to have a successful, you know, Black Friday?
Well, so that's what we're prepping for is you know, massive things. But I think everyone forgot last year. Last year really wasn't that bad. I mean, we were overprepared, so you know, we had tons of people on, and it felt even last year like a busy Saturday. And it felt pretty much like that this year too. I mean, the mall. I got into the mall. The mall parking lot wasn't packed. I luckily had an 11 to 8 shift, so I got to sleep in the morning. And I woke up, and one of my coworkers on Twitter was like, "I arrived at 8 o'clock for a 10 a.m. shift, and I'm parked." And yeah, it's not that crazy. So I think I left 10 minutes early for work and got in there, parked fine, parked far away just in case it got busy later in the day. But it was a dreary day for us. It was very drizzly, but the mall was busy, you know, again, probably, you know, still the busiest day of the year, but it certainly didn't feel as insane.
So that's not super good news. It means that people are not consuming as much as they would have a couple of years ago.
I think, and as somebody has already pointed out in the chat room, I think a lot of it comes down to, is everyone sick of Black Friday? So now you have the advent of Cyber Monday now or whatever, when a lot of the big deals on online websites happen. And I think you're finding more people are shopping online. And I'm sure if you combine those two together, we might see a downturn in actual spending. But I can't tell how much of that is offsetting traffic to websites versus you know, a loss in traffic altogether.
All right. Black Friday in Canada, Randy, does it happen too?
There are actually Canadians who drive to the United States to go shopping yesterday. They took the day off. You know, it would have been a regular work day here, just as Thursday was a regular work day here in Canada. And they really do... it's not a, you know, not a big deal. Like I say, I found very few Canadians who had any idea what Americans do on Thanksgiving, but the understanding that there are retail stores that are discounting some of their wares
aren't they going to be discounting for a couple of weeks?
You know, it's really become a lot of ways to scam crowds of customers, you know, advertise an incredible deal on an item that you only have one of, and then, you know, stock the shelves with 300 similar items at a regular price, that sort of thing.
Okay.
You know, but like I say, you know, anytime there are deals to be had, everyone, including your foreign neighbors, are going to come sniff them out.
Yeah. All right. Quick question. Turkey, do you hear about Thanksgiving in the U.S.? Here, we hear a little bit about it and in the U.S., this Thanksgiving thing has started, and that's it.
I myself, of course, I hear a lot of it since lived there. Yeah, but in general, no.
Okay.
I think it's interesting to, you know, as Turkey was saying, you know, one of his big points of now is the pilgrimage, and we sort of have our pilgrimage of capitalism around the same time.
Which is fantastic also. And I guess it is some sort of ceremony slash, you know, not religious, but it's almost like a tradition.
It is a societal tradition, yeah. Absolutely.
And you do have the animal, you do sacrifice to, everyone meets around it, and you have this activity that you do, which is shopping just afterwards. And there is some striking similarities. And we will all be doing that, except for Turkey, of course, on Christmas next month. We might have another show before that, a Phyllis something for dummies. I don't want to say what, but probably in 2 weeks, if all goes well, that will happen.
Well, but, quick question for Randy, since he's, you know, he loves food so much. so since we eat turkey on Thanksgiving, what's your typical Christmas holiday meal?
It actually has, in my lifetime, it's kind of become the same. I remember when I was young, people used to make a big deal about having one distinct meal on Thanksgiving and then a completely different one on Christmas. Like, so since we had turkey for Thanksgiving, we're going to focus on this big ham or something like that, you know? And
big ham?
Yeah.
Yep. Big, yeah. A big spiral cut ham.
Right. And since I grew up, you know, since I grew up in South Texas or Northern Mexico, depending on how you look at it, there was always a tradition of eating tamales on Christmas Eve. That's just like a really big deal. It will shock you if you go talk to someone who makes and sells tamales, what they, you know, how many they're able to make and sell in the 2 or 3 weeks before Christmas. Like hundreds of thousands of tamales are distributed around some parts of the world, and that's a tradition. But I mean, this year on Christmas, I'm going to be making another turkey and stuffing.
Mm. Well, you know what, guys? You're making me hungry, and I actually have to go, so I'm going to go eat at some point. So we're going to bring the show to close without the, and now for something completely different that we usually do. I wanted to talk about football and Thierry Henry's hand, but I guess we're going to leave that for another time. Let's go to the end of the show with a quick mention of iTunes. And if you please can go to iTunes and leave us a review, that would be absolutely wonderful, because it helps us getting a little bit more visibility in the iTunes store. That's really nice of you if you do it. And I also want to... Oh, crap. I wanted to talk about France 24. Oh, I'll do that next time. And I want to thank my wonderful co-hosts for being here and give them a chance to talk about what they do on the internet so people can find them and get entertained before the next edition of the Phileas Club. Turkey, where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter. My user ID is Zodi.
You're breaking up, so
it's
I'm
being taken over by robots.
Robotic Turkey is in the house. So Turkey is Saudi on Twitter. That's Saudi. Thank you so much for being here, Turkey. John, where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Copper Dome. And you can also check out my podcast where we review movie trailers at negativecutters.com.
Thanks so much for being here and for agreeing to be on the show on such short notice, which was literally 30 seconds.
It was a fun experience, and thank you very much. I had a great time.
Likewise. And Randy, since you're here, we might as well give you the opportunity.
As always, twitter.com/randydeluxe. That's all I need.
You can talk more about stuff. Are you good?
No, that's fine.
Okay,
we're good.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, everyone. I am NotPatrick on Twitter. That's twitter.com/NotPatrick. And you can find the show at thephileasclub.com, or more easily, the central website where I host all my shows, which is frenchspin.com. And if you want to comment or read the show notes, you can go to that site also. And finally, you can send an email to phileas@frenchspin.com. And that's going to be it for us. We will talk to you again in a month at the latest, and maybe in 2 weeks if we do that special. Thanks a lot, guys, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
What we should do is we should have a show where it's an inconvenient time, like, for everybody, you know, like, so it's like it's like midnight for me and whatever 5 a.m. for someone, and that way, you know, like, we can't possibly get it wrong because it's gonna hurt.
We'll remember how much of a pain it is.
I already miss Turkey's Ranting. Like, I want to hear this show right now so I can hear what's been going on for the last hour and a half.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.